Welcome back to Off the Record, an official podcast of the Fordham Observer. I'm your host, Morgan Johnson, and today I'm joined with...
Hi, I'm Ashanti Johnson, and I am a contributor for The Observer.
Hi, I'm Abby Grunzinger, and I'm an editor for The Observer. I'm also the president of the FCLC Writers Room Club.
Woohoo! Okay, so today we're going to be talking about all things Oscar noms, because they're happening soon. And this is a big deal. So to start everything off, I think we should start by going around and saying our overall feelings about the Oscars this year.
I did make an effort to see most of these things in theaters when they were coming out. And I think the Oscars, obviously some snubs, some surprises, some, you know, hot takes, but overall, I'm not super shocked by a lot of the things that ended up making it in. I think that the Oscars are, I don't know, they're generally a pretty good measurement of what's been talked about this year, what's been out. I know that there's a lot of politics involved, and there's a lot of, you know, the movies that have like the biggest marketing budgets and are able to really push themselves and the people involved, those ones do tend to get the most hype and the most nominations. So yeah, I think we'll get into it. There are definitely some things that might have been left out, definitely some things that were included that I was wondering why they might have been included, but I'll pass it to Ashanti for now.
Okay, so I've always loved the Oscars since I was younger and I wanted to be an actor. And yeah, I just love the Oscars, honestly. Sometimes whenever I have like free time, I'll like watch old Oscars telecasts on YouTube. But for this year's nominations, I'm not all that shocked, you know, because a lot of them were coming from, I guess, like word of mouth. Like after the film was released, there was a lot of popularity around them and speculation that they would be nominated for Oscars. And a lot of them were. I'm also ready to get into it.
Yeah, just to kind of repeat what everybody else has been saying, I love the Oscars, always tuning in, you know, always staying up late to watch them. I especially love the musical performances. The first one coming to the top of my head is Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga singing Shallow that one year. That performance makes me chuckle every time I watch it, because just Bradley Cooper, and then there's Lady Gaga. But, okay, so I think we should talk about snubs, or kind of hot takes, or both at the same time. And I feel like the first snub I can think of is Charles Melton in May, December. Personally, I don't understand why he's not on the list, because I didn't really know much going into May, December, but Charles Melton just gave a full body acting experience. Like, I felt like he was a little boy trapped in a grown man's body, and I don't think many people could have like did what he did.
Yeah, I 100% agree about Charles Melton. I think, not to be like, I'm an actor, but when I took an acting class, my acting teacher talked a lot about the idea of like substance versus cover. So even in our normal lives, like not just characters on screen, all of us have substance, which is the things that we're really feeling, really experiencing, sort of the deepest truths about ourselves, whereas cover is sort of like what we show to the world. And any acting performance is going to have a balance of substance and cover. So what the character is really experiencing versus what they're putting on. And as an actor, you have to understand what they're really feeling, but also how they're displaying that to the world, and maybe what sort of truths they're revealing to themselves, or what kind of secrets they're keeping from themselves. And I think Charles Melton just absolutely nailed that. His arc throughout May, December, like the way that you can see him sort of being defensive, or, you know, kind of being like, no, my life is great, everything's fine, like I love my wife, I love my kids, I love my life. And then, you know, I feel like you don't see one specific super crumbling moment. I mean, there is the moment when he has sex with Natalie Portman's character, and that's kind of a moment of like weakness, or like where things are really affecting him. But I feel like you just see it in such subtle ways throughout the movie, and I think such a nuanced performance. Yeah, that definitely deserves recognition and to be rewarded for that, I think.
Yeah, Abby, I definitely loved your reference to Charles Melton's use of nuance in the film. For me, when the minute he came on screen, I knew there was something wrong with him. I knew there was some repressed trauma within him, just like begging to come out. And I definitely think that Melton showcased an amazing performance. It was literally one of my favorite performances, like, of 2023, and out of the entire cast. Like, although you do have like Oscar like heavyweights like Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore on screen, I definitely think Melton stole the show with his arc, especially with the use of symbolism in the film, like the use of the butterflies and how he is a caterpillar rather, trapped in this cocoon. And as his recollection of his trauma slowly begins to unravel, he emerges as this beautiful creature.
Yeah, especially when I think of Charles Melton's character in the movie, I specifically think about that scene when he's on the rooftop with his son. And it just feels like him trying to like fit in with his son, and there's just like a juvenile element to it of him trying to be cool with his son, but also he's also meant to be the authority figure for his son, and he doesn't feel like the authority figure. And I feel like this movie could just be summed up with that scene, and there's like both actors in that scene, I was just speechless, and I was like, that's the scene that should be playing when his name pops up and they play a little scene from the movie.
I also, for me, the other scene, it's just this like one shot of him, and I think it was maybe released as a still photo or something, but it's this one shot of him, and he's sort of like behind a fence or whatever, and he's watching his kid's graduation, and he just has this look in his eyes, and he's like tearing up, and I think he like runs his hand through his hair because he's like, you know, just overwhelmed by emotion. But it truly, like, I mean, that's such an accurate depiction of someone being so overwhelmed by emotion. It didn't look fake. It didn't look put on. Like, he just, I don't know what he tapped into as an actor in that moment, but he was really experiencing something. And I feel like those, you could just see so many levels. And I feel like I can't put into words exactly everything he was, you know, expressing as the character, but he was expressing so much. I think that was just like a beautiful shot that's like ingrained into my head.
Another snub. And this one, I think we can go into Past Lives and how Greta Lee was not nominated. Past Lives, for me, it's just one of those movies where you go into it and you leave it and you're like, whoa, I never thought about life. I never thought about that aspect, or I've never thought about all the people I meet in my life. And what if? Just those big, like, what if questions. And I think Past Lives just... you guys.
yeah, Past Lives. So I watched it on the plane coming back from home to school for winter break, because I couldn't get it anywhere else. And then I was on the plane and I was like, well, Southwest has it on their thing. So I was watching it on the plane and just like trying not to start sobbing in my seat in public on a plane, because it was just so, so beautiful. And I think I wish the entire movie got more nominations throughout, because I think it's just so well put together and so great. I don't know. Yeah, I was a huge fan of Past Lives and would have loved to see more Past Lives representation in the nominations. It just does such a great job of capturing the sort of like in another life heartbreak. You know, it's like they in another life, you know, oh my gosh, I can't remember their names, but they were actually soulmates, you know, but then Greta Lee's character has come to, it's Nora, right? Yeah, Nora has, you know, come to New York and made this whole other life for herself, and she's just gone on a different branch, on a different path, but you can see like that other path. It's so close, but it's just not there. I don't know. It's so beautiful. I love that movie.
Anybody else have another snub?
Okay, so for me, my biggest snub was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem being snubbed for best animated feature. Like, the animation style was amazing. The humor, of course, with when you have Seth Rogen on that project, of course, it's going to be amazingly funny. And there was also a lot of heart to it. And it felt definitely like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were like actual teenagers to me, like literally like struggling to like grow up and like figure out where they fit in. Like, do they belong in the sewer or should they emerge into the real world? Like, they weren't like beefed up, testosterone fueled, like Michael Bay creatures. They felt like actual kids to me. And it just moved me in so many ways. And I'm just so upset that it got snubbed. But it is what it is.
I just watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem recently. That's like one of the best talking animal movies I've ever seen. Because one, they're playing teenagers. And they do actually feel like teenagers. Like, if I went into a high school today, I could probably find four of them. Like, the first, like, four boys I pick in the hallway would probably act just like that. And I also think it's a testament to the actual, like, teenage boys playing them. But also, I feel like they got all of, like, the Gen Z lingo and humor and, like, TikTok references so right. And they all felt really authentic and not like forced. And yeah, it was such a good movie. Like, I was watching it and I was just smiling the whole time. I was like, this is so adorable. I was like, just let them go to school. Like, they just want to be a part of the culture. But another snub, which I feel like a lot of people don't talk about, but in the best original song category, Can't Catch Me Now by Olivia Rodrigo should have been in that category. And I will stand on that because I'm an avid Hunger Games fan. And I just feel like Can't Catch Me Now playing during the credits after the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes really just it encompassed the whole message of the movie and whether Lucy Gray is still with us or she's dead or not. Like, I don't think anybody else could have written that song or did it the way Olivia Rodrigo did, and I'm just so upset that it's not getting that recognition. Also, I can like imagine like the performance of it at the Oscars. It would have been her like wandering the stage, like she's in the forest, and then I had like a vision of like Rachel Zegler. Maybe she would like take over and like do like the background vocals. So it'd be like, is it Lucy Gray or is it not? Like, just walk with me and like picture it, guys. Like, you would. It's there, and it should happen.
I got chills when you described that performance concept. So the Oscars should definitely hire you to organize that. But yeah, I'm kind of surprised that, I mean, I guess, is this Olivia Rodrigo's first like song for a movie in that capacity? Okay, yes, we think so. Yeah. I feel like with this one, I am, yeah, a little bit surprised that she wasn't. I do foresee her getting an Oscar nom in like not that many years, just because I feel like she's could kind of go the Billie Eilish route as being this sort of like Gen Z, you know, burst onto the scene pretty quickly artist. And now Billie Eilish has won an Oscar, has another Oscar nom. We can talk about predictions, but I feel like there's a high chance that she wins this one as well. And I feel like Olivia Rodrigo is in that state where she's like won the Grammys, you know, she's in demand and she's very like trendy and popular and whatnot. So I feel like she'll have more songs over the next, you know, few years that will get her some recognition from the Academy.
Also, I just feel like ha her writing a song for the Hunger Games soundtrack was just like perfect because it's like she knows the medium, like she knows the books, like she's a fan of Twilight, like it's in that like same genre, or it's like that genuine connection and also love for it was just like shining through in like the product of Can't Catch Me Now. Okay, hot take number one is Maestro. We're going to get into Maestro, and I'm just gonna go on a quick little rant. I would first like to preference this and say I'm a huge fan of Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper, you love the Philadelphia Eagles. I also love the Philadelphia Eagles. I want to go to an Eagles game just to see you sitting in your box with your family. Okay? I loved A Star is Born. You were in A Star is Born. You wrote it, you directed it, and everything, okay? And I saw that you were directing, wrote, produced, starred in Maestro, and I was like, damn, I gotta see this movie. I love my boy Bradley, okay? I was like, I'm here for it. Like, Bradley, you were talking up this movie, and I was like, I have to see it. I think my mistake number one going to see Maestro in my living room was watching Tar the night before. It might have set the movie up for failure, but I did it. And then I saw Maestro. And Bradley Cooper, you've gone on your press tour and you've continuously talked about how you weren't making a biopic and you wanted to focus on Leonard Bernstein's marriage. And I was like, okay, we're going to focus on the marriage. I finished that movie and I felt like I hadn't learned anything that I learned in the first 30 minutes about your relationship than I learned at the end. You know, let me take you through the first 30 minutes of the movie. I was engaged. I was like, oh, this relationship, so cute. Like, you guys, like, your courtship, very, very, very cute. I was like, oh, Leonard Bernstein's also gay. Cool. And then we progress through the movie, and I'm just losing. I lost the thread. I lost the plot. I was like, wait, what's happening? Okay, they're together. Okay, she's a little angry. I don't know why. Okay, Bradley Cooper, you're making Leonard Bernstein, you're looking at other men. Okay, you're probably with them, and I'm not seeing this. But at the end, I'm just like, where did we go? And I don't know where we went.
Well, for me, I agree with you, Morgan. I also love Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper, I can fix you in A Star is Born. I can fix you in Silver Linings Playbook. I can fix you, period. Okay, anyway, so for me with Maestro, I feel like Bradley Cooper did an amazing job with directing. It was beautifully directed, visually striking, but I think maybe he prioritized style over substance because the performances failed to move me. Yeah. I guess I do definitely sympathize with Leonard Bernstein and Felicia Montenegro in their marriage, but for me, there was just nothing there.
All right, yes, I have many thoughts about Maestro. So I work at the Paris Theater, which is owned, I don't know, it's a Netflix-owned theater. So my opinions do not reflect anything of my employer, blah, blah, blah. But we have been showing Maestro since the Wednesday right before Thanksgiving. And the other day I did the math, and as of Sunday, February 4th, we had 23,291 people come in to see it, I think. So there was a lot of screenings of Maestro, a lot of people coming in to see Maestro. I've had a lot of time to sit and think about Maestro. I do agree that I think it's a really beautiful film. Shout out to cinematographer Matthew Libatique. I think that's how you say his name, but he did an excellent job. It looks very pretty. I do think that Carey Mulligan is great in the film. The conclusion that I came to about why I disliked Maestro so much is that of all the stories they could have picked to tell about this composer, conductor, and I think relatively famously gay man, Leonard Bernstein, they picked to tell the story about his marriage to a woman. And I just think that was a strange story to pick in the scope of his life. I feel like they didn't even, I know that Bradley Cooper talked about, well, we're not doing a biopic, we're doing the story of their marriage. I feel like for me, that's kind of where the film went wrong. Because the whole movie, it's about his relationship with Felicia and how they're married and how there were ups and downs, but how there was, at least on some level, like, love was there in some capacity. But the movie, to me, when I was watching it, I almost framed it as he had this great life. He was successful. He had, you know, great children, a great wife. His only flaw was that he was gay. That's how the movie framed it a little bit to me. It's like, if he weren't gay, everything would have been perfect in his life. Now, obviously, I do not endorse that view, but I think that's why I felt kind of uncomfortable and confused when actually watching the film. And then the other thing is I agree with you, Morgan. I feel like I didn't learn all that much about his life, his work, even his relationship. I feel like you get pretty quickly in the beginning of the movie. I think there's like one scene where they're doing a TV interview and Felicia and Leonard are talking and she's like, oh, well, he's doing, you know, West Side Story with Stephen Sondheim, but otherwise we don't really see anybody working on anything. We don't really see him, you know, we see him like conducting at times and whatnot, but I feel like I didn't learn that much about his career, his body of work. And, you know, maybe that wasn't the goal of the movie, but perhaps it should have been a goal of the movie for me.
No, yeah, I watch all my movies on Netflix with subtitles, and if I hadn't, I would have completely missed that he composed West Side Story, because I saw that pop up on my subtitles, and I was like, wait, he composed West Side Story? No idea. And I also think, since they titled the movie Maestro, when I think of Maestro, I think of somebody who's like, you have to read between the lines of the sheet music. You're guiding somebody, you know? And I just feel like with such a big title, this movie didn't tackle any of it. Sure, he's conducting. Sure, there's that big 6-minute, 10-minute scene of him conducting that orchestra, which was super cool. But if you're making the plot about the marriage, I didn't learn anything except Leonard Bernstein loved men. He loved his wife. His wife divorced him, but she still loved him too. And she died. That was it. And I think the music was beautiful. I think the movie was beautifully shot. But like, other than that, I was confused the whole time. I don't know if maybe I was hate watching it after like the first 30 minutes. I should maybe give it another chance, but I have no desire to. I'm just like, damn. I feel like so much more could have been done with this movie.
Yeah, you brought up that scene in the church when he is conducting, and I'm pretty sure the entire thing's just one long take. And I think that, for me, highlight of the movie, that was the part where I was watching it where I actually felt like, oh, wow, I'm into this. Like, I've gotten into this. And as soon as it ended and went right back to whatever else it went right back to, I was out of it again. But I think also the reason that was so emotional, I mean, it was well shot, and I guess Bradley Cooper did a good job of, you know, conducting the orchestra in that scene. But it was also just that it was Leonard Bernstein's music that was making that so emotional. It was the score that was composed by Leonard Bernstein that was making it so powerful. So yeah, I wish there had been a little more focus on his music specifically, because I think that's the standout part of the movie, but also a lot of his legacy is this fantastic music that still is, you know, obviously affecting us and moving us to this day.
Well, I know on social media there's a lot of gossip going around claiming that Maestro is like the villain of the Oscars, and I can definitely see it. For me, when I found out Maestro was coming out, it felt very Oscar baity, because you have a former Oscar nominee, Bradley Cooper, coming in, writing, directing, producing a film about and acting in a film about a larger than life figure in the American music scene. And for me, I could tell that there was a lot of heart when Bradley Cooper took on the project. I remember when he was on The Late Show, Stephen Colbert, and he was saying how he would be visiting Leonard Bernstein's children for Thanksgiving, which I thought was really sweet. So I can tell he's gotten to know Leonard Bernstein's life very intimately, and I feel like that was the focus of the film, just like mostly him. Well, the title literally is Maestro. It isn't like Leonard and Felicia. It's him, Leonard Bernstein's genius. It's an ode to Leonard Bernstein's genius. But for me, I didn't really get that from it.
Yeah, I don't think your genius was shown, Leonard Bernstein. No offense, but I wasn't picking it up, you know, in the beginning. I was like, oh, he wants to be a maestro, okay? And then that was never followed through, except when they would show him directing or teaching for like 5 minutes, but he'd be making googly eyes at his assistant. I'd be like, okay, pop off king. Where are we going? And then his wife would be in the background. It was like, okay, this is how it is. Or, what's his name? Matt Bomer? Bomer? The guy in The Fellow Travelers, okay? Love him. Fellow Travelers, side note, amazing. Made me sob. But he was in the movie, and then he left the movie, and I was like, wait, what happened in that relationship? I know you guys hugged in Central Park, but were you guys like one true loves, or like just like had to call? I was like, where's the loose ends? Like, I just feel like none of the plot points that were set up or plot lines that happened in the movie, none of them were like followed through on, and they were just like there to be there and never shown again.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I also agree with something Ashanti said about the movie, even from the first trailers, looking just like Oscar bait. I was talking to my friend about, before the movie even came out, we were just talking about the trailer, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with the movie Tropic Thunder, but it's like a satire of sort of the film industry and exploitation and things like that. Hilarious movie. But that movie starts out with three like fake film trailers that are parodies of like the sort of big, you know, I guess like Fast and Furious or like John Wick-esque action movie. Another one's a very like inappropriate, you know, toilet humor comedy. And then another one's like supposed to be a really dramatic Oscar bait movie. And my friend and I were talking about the Maestro trailer, and she was like, the Maestro trailer looks like one of the trailers at the beginning of Tropic Thunder that would be like an Oscar bait, like a fake Oscar bait trailer, because it was just like the black and white and sort of the vague dialogue. And it was, so yeah, unfortunately, I was hoping that that was just how the trailers were marketing it. Unfortunately, to me, that is kind of what the whole movie felt like. It's just like, how can we make the most like Oscar looking movie, I guess, that we can. But I don't feel that it will actually win a lot of the awards that it thinks it should.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Bradley, but I have to agree. If Maestro wins anything in any of the major categories, I will audibly make a sound. Audibly something will come out of my mouth, and it may be a gasp, it may be a holy, you can finish what I was gonna say, but I will actually be shocked. And when Bradley Cooper's face comes on the screen for like best actor,
on some levels I do feel kind of bad for him, because you can tell he was so sincere about it. And there was that one video of him, that clip of him at the Golden Globes, and it like cut to him right after he lost one of the awards. I think it was probably best actor, and he's just sitting there and he's like smiling, but it looks like a very forced smile, and I don't know if there are tears in his eyes or it's just the way the light is shining. And so I do kind of feel bad for him, because I can tell that he was very sincere and he was really committed to telling this story. I just don't think it got executed very well.
No, and I completely get it. Like, his whole press tour, he's been talking about how he's loved the idea of maestros and conductors like his whole entire life, and I can definitely see that. But I just feel like the passion towards that idea of conducting and the nuance in it just was not shown in Maestro or tackled enough. You know, there's that one like 6-minute scene, and there could have been like 20 of those, because I feel like there's a lot of times Leonard Bernstein was conducting and they just were not highlighted at all. Okay, moving on from Bradley Cooper, we have the next, I feel like, biggest commotion around the Oscars, which is Barbie. You know, we have I'm Just Ken. That was shocking, you know, but more importantly, or not importantly, Margot Robbie wasn't nominated for Best Actress. And the internet has been up in arms. I think it's all right. I mean, I think she should have been nominated, but I can't remember who else is in the category with her. But what are your guys' thoughts about Barbie? Barbie Mania? Barbieheimer?
So I actually feel really in the middle about Barbie's nominations, particularly like lack of certain nominations. I think Greta Gerwig for director and Margot Robbie for actress in a leading role are the biggest ones that everybody's talking about. I think that there are some people who were like, Barbie was never going to get nominated. Like, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't need Oscars for that. Like, it, you know, it made $1 billion. Like, that's its consolation prize. And I think that that's not 100% correct, because it was getting nominated. Margot Robbie, you know, was getting nominated for in other awards, like ceremonies. She was getting nominated for Best Actress. Greta Gerwig was getting nominated for Best Director. So I think it wasn't totally out of the question to think that it was going to get the nominations. I am not particularly shocked that it didn't get like Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie didn't necessarily get the nominations. Just like looking at the actress in the leading role category, I mean, you've got like Lily Gladstone, Emma Stone, Carey Mulligan, Sandra Hüller, and then Annette Bening for Naiad, which is also maybe something we could talk about. But it's, you know, those roles are kind of the more quote-unquote prestige roles that the Academy tends to go for. So Margot Robbie being in a movie like Barbie, I think there are some people who want to put Barbie into the prestige movie category. There are others who like, it was a toy commercial. Again, I feel like I'm sort of in the middle about that. So I guess I'm not super up in arms about the lack of nominations. I don't feel like I would have been shocked if they had gotten noms. I'm also not shocked that they didn't. That's kind of my take on that.
So for me, I think I'm not too upset to see Margot Robbie getting snubbed for Best Actress in a leading role, although I am kind of upset that Greta Gerwig didn't receive a nomination for Best Director. usually since the directing category seems a lot like a glass ceiling that a lot of women like fail to shatter. Like, we literally just got the first woman to win that award, like, literally this century. Like, and the Oscars have been around for like 96 years. But I am happy to see Justine Triet getting a nominations, who a lot of people thought was a man, by the way, when it came out or when the nominations were released. But I definitely agree with you, Abby. Like, for the Academy kind of sees like comedy films as like low-key, unserious. And Barbie was just a very hot pink, funny, like over the top film with a very large production value. So I feel like Barbie didn't really seem to be the film that kind of film that the Academy can take seriously.
Yeah, I'm indifferent as well. I would have liked to see it happen, but I also hadn't. When nominations first initially came out, I hadn't seen all of the nominated movies yet. But the only, I could see Margot Robbie taking NIAD's place, Annette Bening's for Best Actress. Haven't seen NIAD, so I'm just going to take her spot and replace it with Margot Robbie. The fact that Ryan Gosling got nominated for Best Actor, the fact that he got nominated, I mean, I don't know. It just seems like something the Oscars would do. I mean, you know, the plot of Barbie, Barbie Surprise, they would do that. I mean, of course they would nominate Ken. I don't see the world being any different just because Barbie came out and won a billion, not won, made $1 billion. But yeah, but Barbie, I love you, and I love that you gave me What Was I Made For? We can transition into our predictions and our reactions to the nominations. And I'm going to start backwards because I just transitioned with What Was I Made For. And I think it's a given. And if Billie Eilish and Phineas don't win Best Original Song with What Was I Made For, I'm suing. I'm going to be angry. Something audible is going to come out of my mouth, and it probably won't be that nice, because I think What Was I Made For, it just encompasses the entire movie. And I think when a song is able to do that and capture the energy of a movie so perfectly, it's a song that deserves an Oscar. And Billy and Phineas, I think you're going to get your second one, because What Was I Made For was perfect. No notes. And I can't wait to see your performance at the Oscars. But I hope Ryan Gosling performs I'm Just Ken. I have another performance visual for everybody listening. I picture Ryan Gosling, big fur coat. He's giving the mob wife aesthetic. He's in the back. He has to open the show. No opening monologue, Ryan Gosling. He's in the back of the house. He's coming down. He's touching people's faces, Kenergy to the max. And he's like, I'm just Ken. You know, maybe there's a band of Kents. Actually, scratch that. Kens are just placed randomly around the crowd, and they all just start popping up, and you're like, whoa, Ken, Ken, Ken. And he's moving down. Suddenly I want him to be flying, so he needs to have like wires attached to him. He's in the sky. I'm just Ken. Maybe like a kind of a, like a Wicked Elphaba moment. Fur coat actually super long, it's flowing in the wind. He's like, I'm just Ken. Maybe a little choreo number, something like that. Something campy, something kind of like the scene in the movie, but in a theater.
Thank you for that amazing visual, Morgan. I really hope the directors of the Oscars can bring it into fruition. Okay, so I definitely agree with you, Morgan. I'd like to see What Was I Made For take home the Oscar for Best Original Song. I think it's kind of a given, seeing as Billie Eilish and Phineas O'Connell already won the Grammy for Best Song of the Year. So, come on, you got to give them to him now. And I also like enjoy the message of the song. I was kind of debating about what it's supposed to mean with a few fellow Rams. And I think it definitely encapsulates Barbie's sense of existentialism into a beautiful melody. So I'd like to see them win. But also with the other nominees, we have The Fire Inside by Diane Warren from Flamin' Hot. Of course, an obligatory Diane Warren nomination. I'm really not surprised there. But a lot of these songs I didn't even know were featured in the film. Like, I watched Flamin' Hot. It was okay. And I didn't even know that there was a song in that film, along with Wazaze, a song for My People by Scott George for Killers of the Flower Moon. Yeah, some of these songs just kind of flew under the radar for me. But yeah, I'm manifesting a win for Billy and Phineas.
Yeah, that's. I'll just make it 3 votes for What Was I Made For. That's definitely the one that I think is going to win. I think it's a good song and it encapsulates the movie. It was also used in the movie, so I think it also got some of the most like prominence. And I also think, you know, Billie Eilish, they like her at the Oscars. I think it's got all the ingredients of an Oscar winning song. It's fun to see that in there. It, you know, it's definitely more of a sillier song, but I don't know. We were talking about, you know, Barbie not getting nominations. Sometimes I think the Oscars should maybe appreciate comedy a little bit more than these sort of serious prestige movies. If we're talking about comedy songs, a couple things that I knew weren't going to get nominated, but I would have loved to see get nominated were the Dear Alien song from Asteroid City. And Peaches from the Super Mario Brothers movie. I just love that song. And I just think Jack Black performing that in full Bowser getup at the Oscars would have been great. Again, were those ever going to get nominated? I don't think so. I think Peaches might have been long or shortlisted or something. But yeah, we have what we have. So yeah, What Was I Made For? That's my prediction.
Okay, next category is original screenplay. And the nominees are Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, and Past Lives. Okay, I'm biased here because actually I haven't seen Anatomy of a Fall. That's the only movie on this list I have not seen. I'm going to, don't worry, I promise. I have to see the Ice Cube song in it? Or whose song is in that movie? There's a song that's being memed on the internet. The 50 Cent song in Anatomy of a Fall. I have to know the reference because I've been seeing the meme all over my Twitter timeline. So I have to feel included. But off the bat, I think this is going to Past Lives. Yeah, it's not going to Maestro. I'm sorry, Bradley Cooper. I feel like I've been bullying you, Bradley. And I mean it with like so much love in my heart. I love you and your pretty blue eyes. I just can't. But yeah, Past Lives. This is gonna be your Oscar, man. Celine song, you're getting it. And I'm your number one fan.
So for my prediction, I would like to say Anatomy of a Fall, only since Justine Triet and Arthur Harari received the Golden Globe for best screenplay. Yet I'll agree with you, Morgan. I think I'll give it to Celine's song for Past Lives. For me, personally, I wasn't moved very much by the film. I think it just needs a rewatch. But there was an intimacy in that film that I don't think you can see in the other categories. So I definitely like to see Celine's song win. And also, her career is going on a big trajectory. She's also directing an upcoming film with Dakota Johnson and Pedro Pascal. I love you, Pedro. Love you, husband. And Chris Evans in talks to and being featured as well. So I think she's definitely a rising star, and I can definitely see this award opening more doors for her.
Yeah, this is original screenplay is a tough category. This is one that I think I could honestly see any of them, unfortunately, except for Maestro, winning and like being deserved, and I would be very excited because I think these were all great films. I think that they just really compelling stories, really great. You know, we talked about like the nuance in Charles Melton's performance. I think these scripts in particular are just so, so packed with nuance and, you know, obviously brought to life by great directors and great actors, but that all comes from the script. So I want to say that will win is Anatomy of a Fall, but, you know, if I had to give like a should win, honestly, almost pretty much any of them, probably Past Lives, I guess, would be my should win, maybe up there with Anatomy of a Fall. But yeah, really great category, in my opinion, for the most part.
Okay, up next, we have Best Supporting Actress, and we have Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferrera for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Okay, this is kind of a tough category for me. I'm going to do process of elimination, so we'll get a top three from me. Jodie Foster, Naiad, sorry I haven't seen it. America Ferrera, I just don't think you're going to get it. I love you, though. I loved your monologue. Next up, I would love to see Danielle Brooks get this for The Color Purple, because I think she was really great in that movie. But I ultimately think that this category is between Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. I'm leaning towards Divine Joy Randolph because obviously she sweeped the whole award season this year. So I think the Oscars are going to be no different, but I could see a surprise of it going to Emily Blunt. But I think it's going to go to The Holdovers because her performance in it was so subtle and real, and I really feel like she played a grieving mother, and just her role in the movie was so normal, and it wasn't like dramatized. It just felt real. So, yeah.
Okay, so whenever I'm making my predictions for the Oscars, the Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress categories are locks for me, and I think that Divine Joy Randolph is a lock for The Holdovers. As you said, Morgan, she's sweeping awards season. Her performance was amazing. There was nuance and humor to her performance that I really enjoyed, and I found it very refreshing. And yeah, for me, I was kind of shocked to see America Ferrera being nominated for Barbie. I'm happy to see more women of color being included in the acting categories, and she's one of them. But for me, like, I wasn't very moved by her performance when I went to go see Barbie in theaters. Her monologue, to me, felt kind of like an info dump on feminism. Yet I know that you definitely can't summarize, like, the entirety of feminism within, like, a minute. But there was a lot of passion just in that monologue. And I feel like we shouldn't be using that monologue to dictate her entire performance in the film. Hers, the performance in the film was like okay, but that monologue was just like her shining moment. And no hate to America Ferrera, but it just didn't really hit for me. So I'm still going with Divine Joy Randolph.
Yeah, very much agreed. Divine Joy Randolph, I believe, is taking it. Fantastic performance. Definitely the standout supporting actress performance of the year for me. When I first saw Oppenheimer back in July 2023, I was like, Emily Blunt's taking it. And I was pretty firm in that, you know, belief, honestly, until I saw The Holdovers. And I was like, sorry, Emily. Love her. Really great performance in Oppenheimer. I mean, especially her main standout scene where, you know, she's being interrogated by the people who are questioning Robert Oppenheimer, J. Robert Oppenheimer. And, you know, she's like, it was all so very long ago. And she just serves in that scene. But yeah, Divine Joy Randolph, I'm just echoing what you guys have already said. Really emotional, really nuanced, really funny, just a really solid depiction of a whole person. You know, I feel like sometimes you only get a little glimpse into a character when they're being portrayed in a certain way by the actor. Divine Joy Randolph, I felt like I knew Mary is her character's name, right? Yeah, I felt like I knew Mary. I felt like I had known her for years. Excellent performance.
Okay, next up is Best Supporting Actor. Okay, we have Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. Off the bat, it's going to Robert Downey Jr. in my eyes for Oppenheimer. Robert Downey Jr., I love you so much. You are a father figure in my eyes. You know, Iron Man for life. You make me so happy. I'm really happy that Sterling K. Brown was nominated for American Fiction. I was really happy to see American Fiction nominations throughout the nominations list because I loved American Fiction. And a runner-up for me in this category would probably be Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. Yeah, those are my... I'll keep it short and sweet.
Okay, so Robert Downey Jr. is definitely a lock for Oppenheimer. Not only just because he won the Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor, but you could tell that in the film, there was a lot of anger that he was repressing against J. Robert Oppenheimer, and it showed. He was mad. So I'll definitely go with Robert Downey Jr. Although I am happy to see, I know for Poor Things it was between Mark Ruffalo and Willem Dafoe. I'm just happy to see Mark Ruffalo being nominated. And for Sterling K. Brown, I did see American Fiction, and I wasn't particularly happy with his performance. Like, no hate to him or anything, but I feel like Charles Melton delivered a stronger performance. Also, shout out to Mark Ruffalo. I hope you are nominated for People's Sexiest Man Alive someday.
Yeah, also, it's Robert Downey Jr. for me. I think that might be my performance of the year, my favorite performance of the year. I'm one of those crazy people who saw Oppenheimer multiple times, and just such a cinematic experience. But there were times when I would go and I would watch the part right after Rami Malek's character is like, we want to see Louis Strauss out of government completely. And then it cuts to sort of a wide shot of the entire hearing and proceedings or whatever. And on the very far right of the screen, you see Robert Oppenheimer as Louis Strauss, like just doing, he's like smiling. You can tell he's like trying to brush it off. You can tell that his character is like, whatever, I don't care, you know. But in actuality, he is somebody who lost the IDGAF war so bad. He is extremely just, you can tell he's someone who's so jaded and so bitter and really takes things to heart. And the fact that his whole arc kind of, at least in the movie, they make it stem from one time he was like, hello, Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein just didn't say anything and walked past. And that's what like all of this, that was sort of the catalyst for his whole arc, is just fascinating to me. The way you see that get all built up in his head. Yeah, also, I think also a great category. Love to see Sterling K. Brown nominated. He's from St. Louis. I'm from St. Louis. We love the 314. I think Robert Downey Jr. is taking it. I know that people obviously know who Sterling K. Brown is. He's famous, but I hope that this nomination continues to help him get even better roles, because he is definitely an incredible actor. And I mean, he's Emmy winning. So I'd love to see him also be Oscar winning as well.
Okay, next up is Best Actress. Okay, we have Annette Bennings for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Emma Stone for Poor Things. Now, I think the race for Best Actress is definitely just between Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone. And also, shout out to Carey Mulligan. I think you were phenomenal in Maestro. I know I've been dissing on Bradley Cooper this whole time, but Carey Mulligan, I love you. You ate in that role. But Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone, I really think it's a coin toss between both of them, because I could understand either of them winning. For Emma Stone, I just feel like in Poor Things, it was very much a full body performance. You were walking like a toddler as a grown woman the whole movie, and I don't understand how you did that walk for so long, because I was watching the movie and I was like, wow. It's like, what? Her walk looks so familiar, and then I realized that's how toddlers walk. It was like, oh, okay. And then Lily Gladstone, you were just incredible in Killers of the Flower Moon. So I honestly don't know who to pick between you two, but either one of you, I will be really happy. But I think I'm going to lean towards Lily Gladstone, because, yeah.
Okay, so for the Best Actress category, I think Lily Gladstone takes the cake for Killers of the Flower Moon, just because Molly was funny. She was, well, when she wasn't dying, she was funny. She was headstrong. She knew her place in the world. She was confident, and she seemed so fearless. And so I definitely enjoyed Lily Gladstone's performance. I haven't seen Poor Things yet, but I am happy to see the Best Actress race, including, again, as I said before, like more women of color. Although I do know that Lily Gladstone uses she, they pronouns. And I'm also happy to see Sandra Hüller being nominated for Anatomy of a Fall, just because like we rarely ever do we see actors in foreign language films, if you can title or label Anatomy of a Fall as a foreign language film, being nominated in the acting categories. Like literally Parasite is like one of my favorite films of all time, and it like sweeped the Oscars in 2019, and none of the actors in the film received any like Oscar nominations. So I'm just happy to see Sandra Hüller here.
Yeah, looking at the Best Actress category, I think in a lot of other years, a lot of other lineups, Emma Stone would easily take it. But I feel Lily Gladstone is getting this one this year. Yeah, like you guys have said, stellar performance from her. And also, you know, she is the first Indigenous woman to ever be nominated for the Best Actress Award. And I think certainly that's not like she should win only because of that. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. I think her performance deserves it. But yeah, like Ashanti was saying, it's great to see people of color be at least a little more represented in some of these categories here.
Next up, we have Best Actor. Okay. Number one on the list. I think you all know who it is. Mr. Bradley Cooper for Maestro. And then we have Colman Domingo for Rustin. We have Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. I think this is going to Cillian Murphy. You were Oppenheimer, and I think you're going to win. Actually, I know you're going to win. I'm so confident in you. And I think everybody in this category was really great in their roles. I actually haven't seen Rustin yet. It's on my list. That in Anatomy of a Fall. But The Holdovers, Paul Giamatti, I really thought your eye was messed up, like, in real life. But the eye in the movie was, like, a character in and of itself. Imagine if, like, that was nominated for, like, Best Supporting Actor, the eye in Holdovers. That would have been the gag of the century. Jeffrey Wright, hilarious in American Fiction. Side note, I go to the movies with my dad all the time, and he's never laughed harder or been more engaged watching a movie than he was watching American Fiction with me. We were the only two people laughing. Actually, he was laughing at all the jokes, and then I was laughing at the jokes that nobody else was laughing at, which was really awkward. I was like, wait, should I be laughing? But I was like, it's funny. But Jeffrey Wright, I'm so happy to see you on this acting best actors list. And yeah, Cillian Murphy, you're taking it.
So in the best actor category, it's a toss-up between Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers and Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, seeing as they both won Golden Globes for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy for Giamatti and Best Actor in a Drama for Murphy. I did see Rustin. I feel like Colman Domingo definitely embodied the spirit of Baird Rustin. He was outspoken. He was determined to make a change. And yeah, his performance was definitely a standout for me. And yeah, if I were to boil it down, I'd like to see Cillian Murphy like receive his flowers for Oppenheimer. But then again, like Paul Giamatti, like his only nomination is for Cinderella Man, and that was like what, 2004. So I'd like to see either of them win.
Yeah, I am also thinking, I do think it's ultimately going to be a toss-up between Cillian Murphy and Paul Giamatti. I do think Cillian Murphy will probably win for Oppenheimer. My brother said something to me that was interesting. He was talking about how he thinks that, you know, Christopher Nolan's going to win Best Director, Oppenheimer will win Best Picture, all of this stuff. But he is not totally sure about Cillian Murphy and Oppenheimer, just because the movie is so extremely well put together on a technical level that, like, the movie, obviously assisted by its performances, but the way it's put together, the way it's directed, edited, shot, like, that's kind of the standout. So there could be a potential for somebody else to win Best Actor. I do still think Cillian Murphy is my top prediction. Honestly, if in any category I had to pick my big upset, I don't know, maybe this is just me thinking in the moment, there is like a small chance that Colman Domingo gets it for Rustin, because I think his performance was incredible in that movie. I thought the movie itself, like particularly some of the writing was a little, I don't know, flat is the right word, but the movie itself was all right. He was fantastic in Rustin. Like, I think I walked away from Rustin being like, man, I wish that had been a better movie so that Colman Domingo's performance could have, you know, stood out even more from the rest of, you know, this year's films and nominations and actors. But yeah, Cillian Murphy, I think you're taking it. Good job, man.
Side note, I just know Colman Domingo's red carpet fit for the Oscars is just gonna be phenomenal. And I will be refreshing my Twitter speed every second until that man's picture pops up on my timeline. Cause I just know you're gonna eat, Colman. I just know you're gonna be at best dressed. Okay, next up we have Best Director. We have Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, and Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. I think that this is gonna go to Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. I just think Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer was such a big movie. It was gargantuan, like the sound mixing, like everything about it. And I just think it all just goes back to Christopher Nolan and how he sees movies and how he visions them from like the get-go. So, yeah, Christopher Nolan, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, Morgan. I feel like Christopher Nolan is long overdue for any Oscar, period. And for me, Oppenheimer was definitely the film to seal the deal. It was larger than life, like historical epic. It took a lot of hard work and a very large production value to get it made. And so I'd definitely like to see Christopher Nolan become an Oscar winner this year.
Yeah, also Christopher Nolan for me. This one I feel kind of clears pretty easily. Just, I mean, the film was fantastic. And then I think also Nolan being somebody who has been, you know, a big name director for such a long time and has yet to get a Best Director Oscar. I think that's, you know, it again kind of has all the ingredients for a win for him. Also, like looking at Oppenheimer, Oppenheimer is nominated for 13 Oscars. And so you've got actor in a supporting role, actress in a supporting role, cinematography, costume design, directing, editing, makeup and hairstyling, music, you know, best picture, production design, sound, and writing for the adapted screenplay. I think, especially when you've got so many nominations in a lot of the technical awards categories, like who brought all those people together? The director, you know, he's overseeing that, he's directing it. So I hope that he gets some recognition for being able to bring out the best in all of his collaborators. Now, I know that just because it has all these nominations doesn't necessarily mean that automatically equals a win for him. I know like Dune at the 2022 Oscars had it like swept in the technical categories, and then director Denis Villeneuve, he wasn't even nominated, I don't think, for Best Director. So you never know, but I feel like if I had to say, I feel like I know, Christopher Nolan taking it for Best Director for Oppenheimer.
Okay, last category, and it's the biggest one, Best Picture. Okay, this is a long list, guys, and it's like everything. So we have American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. I feel like this is going to go to Oppenheimer. I just feel like Oppenheimer as a movie was the most movie I've ever witnessed. Not to quote Harry Styles, but I walked out of there and I was like, this is a movie. This that like that was cinema. And I think Christopher Nolan is like the only person that's made me be like, whoa, that was a movie. Like I walked out of it saying, I have to watch that movie again eventually. And two, I was like, whoa. And seeing if you ever get the opportunity to see Oppenheimer in 70mm IMAX, fly. I like literally fly, walk on water, do it. Because it's l literally stunning. And I guess some other nominees I could see is Killers of the Flower Moon. But really, I just think Oppenheimer just has my heart and soul.
Yeah, I definitely think that Oppenheimer is going to take the win for Best Picture. It's technically genius. It's widely popular since the beginning of the Barbenheimer memes. And I can just see it definitely distinguishes itself from the rest of the category. I think I can definitely see it winning.
Once again, we seem to be in agreement about our takes because, yeah, it's definitely Oppenheimer for me. You know, some other things I would be excited to see them win. I think I would be pretty surprised if anything but Oppenheimer takes this award. Yeah, like I said earlier, I'm one of those crazy people who saw Oppenheimer multiple times. I will disclose that I've seen it 8 times, which, if you do the math, is a full 24 hours. That is a full day of watching Oppenheimer. And I know I'm crazy for that. The way what I tell people is like, you could listen to your favorite artist on Spotify, you could watch videos on YouTube of them performing, but going to see them live, that's the best way you can experience it. So like, I've been trying to see Oppenheimer in the best way that you can experience it. 7 of those 8 times were in IMAX 70mm, which is just the peak way to experience, I mean, probably any movie, but particularly a movie of that caliber. Thank you to AMC Stubs A-List. I have seen that multiple times, but it holds up on every single rewatch. I think every time I go, I've seen something new in there, some new bit of nuance from the acting performances, something that I hadn't noticed before in a shot, something about the way, you know, a certain edit happened. I think it really is just the best picture of 2023 for me. I feel like it's, I also agree with Morgan what you were saying. I'm like, wow, that was a movie. Like, that is a film, that is cinema. Even like when I've tried to make my Christopher Nolan rankings of like, you know, my first favorite Christopher Nolan, my second favorite, I feel like I can't even put Oppenheimer in the list because I feel like it just transcends so many other movies for me. So yeah, great film. Just like, it's beyond like a masterclass in cinema because I just watch it and be like, how did they do all this? Like, I feel, yeah, I was just in awe the entire time. So excellent movie. That's my best picture.
Yeah, and not to just go on like a Christopher Nolan rant, but like I first saw Oppenheimer, it was like after I'd like had a long shift and then I was like, I have to see Barbie and Oppenheimer in the same day. I saw Barbie first, which kind of was a mistake because I was tired when I saw Oppenheimer. It was low-key falling asleep, but I was still engaged. But you know, since it's such a big movie, I just feel like you, in order to like really understand Oppenheimer, you have to see it like twice. You have to see it multiple times, because when I first watched Oppenheimer, I was like, I get it, like I see the vision, but I was also like, I have no idea who any of these characters are. It's because it's such a large cast that I was confused at who was a scientist and who did what. But seeing it like a second time, it just all clicked. And I was just sitting there understanding everything and understanding the gravity of everything. I was like, whoa. And I just had like the same reaction when I saw Interstellar for the first time. I was just like, whoa, like this is cinema. Like Christopher Nolan, I think you just keep cinema going. Because every time I watch one of your movies, I'm just like, jaw on the floor. Like, whoa. Like, how do you create these stories? How, like, yeah, you're just Christopher Nolan, damn.
I'm just going to jump on the Nolan rant. I think his movies have such a rewatch factor, like, particularly Oppenheimer. I know the first time I watched it, I was like, that was amazing, but I am really confused. And then the more I've watched it, the more I've liked it. Like, I started out, I was like 5 out of 5 stars. And then after I watched it a second time, I was like, man, I wish I could give it 6 out of 5 stars, because the more I understood it, the more I liked it. And a lot of his movies have that rewatch factor. I know this is an unpopular opinion. I'm a huge fan of his movie Tenet. And I know that one is extremely, people don't really like it that much. It's definitely one of his most confusing ones. It for sure has the rewatch factor. Like every time I rewatch Tenet, it goes up higher in the list. So that's, I think, part of, you know, he brought sort of that quality to Oppenheimer, and he put so much into a movie and it just leaves you with more and more things to unpack every time.
I'm so happy Tenet's being released in 70mm IMAX, because I'm gonna see it for the first time and I'm gonna see it in 70mm IMAX, and Christopher Nolan, you have me like, well, I didn't even know what 70mm IMAX was before Oppenheimer came out. Like, what the heck is an IMAX laser? Like, I only want the real stuff. But yeah, guys, this year's Oscars is going to be crazy. Oppenheimer, I have a feeling you're going to come home with a lot of stuff. And everything else, Maestro, I don't know too much, but I'm sorry. I feel so bad. Like, Bradley Cooper, I want to reiterate that I actually do really like you. And I loved you in Silver Linings Playbook. I loved you in A Star is Born. Like, I was your number one fan. My roommate actually has never seen A Star is Born and says she hates all the songs, but she loves Lady Gaga. I'm your number one defender for that. Maestro, I'm sorry, I can't defend you enough. That concludes our Oscars conversation today. Thank you to Abby and Ashanti for participating. Hope you guys enjoyed, and go watch the Oscars.